Well, good morning, 6:06, 7th of October, and it really does feel, there, doesn't it? If you're in your house or outside, you must realize it's a little bit nippier, and giving you a temperature here right now from the Weather Channel app on my phone, 59 degrees, huh? Only 75 is the high and 53 is the low. So I've got Steve Calderazzo coming on now. If you heard the other day, there was some statements made by him, and I really didn't want to get into it over the phone simply because I was not able to understand completely what he was saying. I suggested he come down to the show, which he agreed to do. It sounded like he was dropping out, but I cannot confirm that. So District 1, I thought he sounded like a real bright guy. He was unafraid to name names, call people out. And so it was good radio when he came on before. I didn't know when I had first invited him on the show that he was actually going to be running for office, but the fact that he was, I thought was a good sign. And now he has mentioned an email that's gone around, and I can't say anything about that. I haven't seen it. I don't know anything about it. But he mentioned that there was a scurrilous email casting aspersions upon him with a bunch of false material. So anyway, he'll be here in a minute. He's just got a text that he's on his way. All right, so we had a mayoral council candidate meeting in a first forum, according to Sun News. About 100 residents showed up, and it was broadcast on CLC-TV, and I did not see it. I was not there. I was in bed by fairly early, but looking for anything that you might find. Yeah, so Steve Calderazzo and Richard Hall, who's running for seat 4 or district 4, the district 4 seat, did not attend. And but you did have the mayoral candidates Gina Montoya, who's been on the show, Miguel Silva, Ken Miyagashima, and they were there, and Cassandra Gandara, and Mauricio Eli Guzman, seat 1, and Gandara seat, district 1. Philip Van Veen, who I'm going to get on the show, Greg Smith, or going for district 2. Gilbert Vasquez, Jack Eichmann, district 4, and William Bill Kinsella and Kieran Ryan were there. And I got to get a hold of Bill Kinsella and try to get him on the show. We do have Kieran Ryan coming on the second hour today to talk a little bit more about the judgeship. You know, these judgeships, you can't, it's not like a normal race, you know. All right, so that is what's going on. And we'll find out more from Steve Calderazzo. Steve is an interesting guy. He's very articulate. I enjoyed listening to him, but he'll be on in a minute. Let's hit some headlines for you while everything is fresh here. Trump planning a fall TV ad campaign. Holy cow, new book, Crippled America, detailing the policies. Melania and Ivanka to hit the campaign trail. You've got to admit that however we got here right now, people seem lost. I mean, it really just seems like one of those situations where, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, people were very pleased to be Americans. We're happy in America. We're not as wealthy as they are now. Didn't have the electronic slaves that we do today. And yet people were happier. And so I saw something on the internet last night. You know, I've been studying sociopaths. And you know, some of the things that are going on out there. I just think that some people say that the that Obama's a sociopath. Other people are claiming others, but you know, see this shooter in Oregon, and you see some of these shooters are, you know, the prime examples of people that are sociopaths. Let me just for the heck of it, there's a list of and they say there's 1 out of 100 are sociopaths. Sociopathic traits from a website called Sociopathic Style. I'm not saying that I know the president is, but I've heard that thrown around a lot that he does. One of the things that sociopaths don't have is an ability to identify with people. Glib and superficial charm, grandiose sense of self, need for stimulation, prone to be bored, pathological lying, conning and manipulation, lack of remorse or guilt, shallow emotions, callousness and lack of empathy, parasite lifestyle, poor behavior control, promiscuous sexual behavior, early behavior problems, lack of realistic long-term goals, impulsivity, irresponsibility, failure to accept responsibility for actions, never apologizing, juvenile delinquency. They say around the age of 15, something happens to these people when their character gets set. And so anyway, I might be bringing this stuff up a little bit. But anyway, I've got Steve Calderazzo. He's going to be on in just a minute. But he's going to give us a little bit of, I hope, the inside view of what these campaigns look like. And, you know, you never really, I don't know if you remember Jackson Brown, but he had this album Running on Empty, and it was kind of a view from behind the lights, you know, what it was like to be on the road and stuff. And so we always wonder, you know, when people are running for office, they're putting on a good face, but what happens behind the scenes? What kind of brokering is made? You know, the best people don't show up and just put their name in the hat and then get elected. There's always so much more to it than that. So, you know, we'll just get into that in a minute. I don't claim to have a ton of knowledge of behind the scenes here, but I've found out a little bit. And I think probably we've become a little more sophisticated of a country in the last 50 years. But I think the average person 50 years ago, 25 years ago, 30 years ago was a little bit more open-minded as to anybody can run for president and make it. And you know, you got to have a team behind you. Who the team is made up of and who pays for it, is those are the issues. And all right, so we'll take a little break here. I've got Steve in the studio right now. And we got Kieran coming on later, but I'm dying to find out what happened with Steve. And he's been gracious enough to show up this morning. And it's 6:14, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. I've got the text machine, but I'm going to have to dash out to the car and get it. So, but we'll be back to talk to Steve.
I can see her lying back in a satin dress, in a room where you do what you don't expect. Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been creeping down my back stairs.
It's Kelly here, and I've got Steve Calderazzo in the studio. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet, man. So when you called in the other day, I was kind of really having a hard time following everything that you were saying. It was a little bit stream of consciousness. You might have been up for a few days in the midst of making your decisions and everything. So
yeah, I wasn't sure what I was saying either, to be honest.
All right, so
I had been up, probably still been up.
Yeah. All right, so you're out of the race.
Yeah. You know, as I have meeting after meeting after meeting since last week, and discussion as to what possible outcomes could be in terms of my involvement, it has become completely clear to me that mathematically, you know, I for me, mathematically, I'm 100% guaranteed to put somebody in office that we absolutely cannot afford. And that is the long and short of it.
I'm progressive.
That's it. And, you know, when faced with 100% odds, you know, what choices do you have? It's 100% you're going to put this individual in office. And the bottom line is, she's at the source of the issues that we're having. In this whole 2-3 week process that I've been learning all these things, you know, this is a very dangerous mindset to this city. This minimum wage thing.
Well, let me point out one thing. It is a city that's on a checklist of cities as being the worst place to try to start a business.
100% agree.
And it is a state in which government jobs dominate.
Absolutely. 30% in our city alone.
Yeah. It is a state where the income to welfare ratio, the employed to unemployed ratio is staggering. And we're talking about a city that just simply refuses to grow. We're a runt.
Exactly.
We're a dwarf.
Yeah. And I'm not, and this is the problem that we're having. In a time where we desperately, desperately need an injection in this local, in the local economy and growth, we're doing the opposite things in terms of trying to attract people here, businesses here that will help build that foundation.
The fact that we're on a list of places not to open a franchise is just devastating to hear.
Absolutely. And then the solution is, they're mulling another GRT increase, you know, and the city is mulling another GRT increase for salaries of some sort, but it doesn't make any sense. All the things that they're doing are chasing businesses away. And the unfortunate truth is, if we don't attract some of these businesses, if we don't start attracting businesses that have low paying jobs at first, that offer real opportunities for growth within that structure, if we don't start attracting those people, guess what? They can change minimum wage to $20 an hour, and they could all dance in the streets at $20 an hour. No one's going to pay it. There's not going to be a business here that could afford it. It's just that simple. And to me, you know, I try to follow a path of logic and common sense. I try. I mean, that's you come to me with logic and common sense, you're going to win me. I mean, it's that simple. I don't care what color you are, what clothes you're wearing. You come at me with some logic and some common sense, paths for progress and growth opportunities, I'm going to listen all day long. The fact that they don't, it shocks me. The fact that they do things to stop those kinds of things shocks me.
Well, this kind of euphoric leftism that we've seen in Ken Miyagashima and Billy Garrett is just astounding to me, because has a history of 100% failure. Cities, counties, states that move in a socialist direction, you know, they die.
Absolutely.
Look at Detroit. Detroit is the poster child for turning your city into socialist paradise.
And that's a great point. And I, you know, this is stuff, you know, I've said it 1,000 times. I think people that know me know where I come from. They know where my roots are. I remember what it was like to make $3.35 an hour. And what that taught me is I don't want to make $3.35 an hour, which was minimum wage at that time.
Yeah.
It's just that simple. But, you know, I said it also before that there's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for that learning process, starting early.
You don't start out on top. Well, this is just to let people know that there's a famous situation in Washington. This guy was running a credit company, a company that did credit transactions, and he decided that all of his people were going to make $70,000 a year, which is quite a bit of money.
Sure.
You know, that's like $5,000 a month. And so now that company, his brother tried to take him to court to stop it because his brother started the business with him. Now that company is in bankruptcy, and it didn't take long.
No. Well, you know, you got to be realistic with your finances.
I mean, well, I mean, but this is a case of ideals trumping common sense, like you're saying. And the people think, because socialism is so transparently ill-advised, that there must be some secret that the average person doesn't see that actually ratifies it and makes it viable and stuff. And there's not.
No, there's not. There's no magic behind it. You know, I come from that environment, you know, largely socialist. And the reality is there's really nothing going on behind the scenes in terms of deliberately trying to keep anyone down from making any more money. The fact of the matter is, you know, if you want it, there are pathways to get it. It's that simple, you know. I believe that there are genuine people that need help. They need assistance. It's that simple.
But this idea that has been trotted out by the left, that Republicans and conservatives have always been opposed to charity. I spent a year of my life studying and writing about ancient charity. I know the history of charity. And the fact of the matter is, the idea of charity itself comes out of Bible believers. It comes out of the Jewish people and the Christians, and the Christians brought it into Rome. And I got into a little squabble with the Walt the other day. It's called in ancient Rome, you don't have any charity. And then you have this doctrine that comes up after the church is established in Rome called pia causas, pia causa, for pious uses. And outside of that, in the ancient world, no such thing as charity. It doesn't exist. The idea has never been brought up. And if you tell that to a liberal, because liberals seem to believe that everything good originally emanated out of liberalism, they explode. And I've done academic work and published an article in Rutgers. In an article that was stolen from me by my professor, and that's why I got out of that business, but being a professional researcher. But I still have all the books, my notes, and I still have a book that I'm going to write about this in the future. But anyway, the fact is that to care for the poor, that's a Jewish, you know, that's a Christian, it's a biblical undertaking that informed liberalism, and then they tried to take it over. But anyway, we will take care of the most downtrodden in the society. It's the idea of putting everybody else on the government teat that is going to backfire.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is that, you know, I don't understand how they don't get the simple mathematics of it. You know?
I was reading, doing some research last night on sociopathy. The thinking, the values of sociopaths, and one person wrote an article: liberalism is sociopathic.
Yeah,
you know, because of this claim to care about everybody, but to do things that is they're consistently against their interests.
Yeah, well, I tell you, I listened to you say some of those things, and I thought, boy, I could relate to some of those things. That's just a fact. However. You know,
well, there's no perfect person, but I mean, if you're going to have a policy for the society, it should be well-founded, including an experimentation in history, right?
Oh, certainly. I mean, history is going to repeat itself. I mean, we can combine a couple of different things. We can combine socialism with guns. You just have to look. If anyone knows about the Incan civilization, the Inca, they were a closed ethnic body, 40,000, but they ruled 12 million people, okay?
That's the same thing that happens with the Russian, with the Bolsheviks. So what happened with the Incas?
Well, they were conquered by one Spaniard with, you know, I don't remember the numbers, but I want to say
a handful of men.
Yeah, handful. I'm talking a handful.
Well, this brings up this fascinating thing of this, the white god, that the Incan leader had this vision of a white person or a white god showing up. And I don't claim to know the whole story of that.
I don't recall that particular part, but I do know that it took him all but about I don't know, I remember the amount of minutes it took for him to take over that entire civilization with.
Maybe he just showed him his cell phone.
Well, I think he showed him a musket, and that was it. That was it. 12 million people they ruled, one musket, and it was over. So,
but the Incas were famous for doing human sacrifice.
Yeah, they were. But
when they consecrated the Temple of the Sun, it was a line of people two abreast, I believe a mile or two long, and I added it up. I, you know, tried to figure out how many people would fit in this line. It was like 20,000 people.
Well, Well, one of the, and that's the stuff I did not study, but the things that are pertinent to society, for example, their philosophy was very socialist philosophy. If you also, at the same time, it was a very working philosophy. You worked for them. You had food, you had shelter, you know, et cetera. If you were lazy, you were buried alive.
And that's the same as Plato. Plato had an ideal society with four levels on it. But if you were a person who refused to work, you were not to be given anything.
No. And it's interesting because one of the philosophies they had was you always want to take care of the disabled and you always want to take care of the elderly. Those are principal characteristics of that civilization. But at the end of the day, the entire civilization was a socialist civilization, you know, and, you know, to key in on how they ended, I mean, you don't have to look beyond the fact that those few Spaniards, certainly had something to do with them just sort of giving up. I mean, there was no fight there. It was just a conversation. It was over,
yeah.
You know, that kind of
thing. And by the way, you're saying Incas, I think it was the Aztecs who had the Temple
Aztecs,
of the Sun.
Yeah. That's why I was so confused. I'm staring at Aztecs.
It's the Aztecs that had the Temple.
Inca did not roll the head down. Mayan.
Well, they had this, Aztecs had this table that they put their victims on that had a point in the center,
sure,
that would cause, when the people were thrown down on it, it would cause them to thrust up their chest to get off this point, and then they would stab them with obsidian knife, I think it was, cut the heart out while it was still beating, you know, and hold it up to the sun,
sure,
push the body off, and then they also practiced cannibalism.
Yeah. No, I yeah, that's
there's a little bit
we got a little away from this stuff.
Anyway, we'll come back and talk about ancient socialism. No, we're talking to Steve Calderazzo about local election. Let's dig into some of the things we can talk about, some we really probably can't get into. But Steve, as Steve said, there's a few things he wants to keep close to his chest, but we'll come back and talk about what we can. 6:32, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450. I've got my line, text line 805-6180, and we're going to come back and talk about this local election.
You better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back still.
It's Kelly, 6:35. I got Steve Calderazzo here. So, Steve, what is it like to go from being a person who's enthusiastic about politics to running?
Well, very quickly, you get hit in the stomach, you get hit in the head, you get hit. It's like being jumped. No fun. I've been jumped a couple of times. That's no fun. And, you know, let me just put it to you like this. It's extremely difficult to fight people on the left, people on the right, people in front of you, and then fighting people behind you. It's really that simple. You need to be prepared for a fight like that. And I wasn't prepared, not because I'm not prepared mentally or any of those kinds of things, or even with information. You know, I'm armed with a lot of those kinds of things that are necessary to have success, I think, in this kind of arena. But the reality is, I'm not trying to be a career politician. I'm trying to fix the things that are broken in the city that I am absolutely in the middle of, you know, and componing here.
So instead of that, what's important to the players in the game?
Well, what's important to most of the players in the game for me are, you know, the fact that we need to.
No, but what are these people, if you're fighting for the things that are good, what are the people who are inside the game trying to get?
Well, honestly, you know, it's only become evident over the course of the last, you know, 4 to 8 years as we've watched our cultural identity in this community just up and disappear.
What did it used to be?
Well, I mean, it used to be about, well, let's just take one significant cultural example. I mean, the whole enchilada fiesta disappeared like a fart in the wind, and you haven't heard a peep. This is a festival. It doesn't matter if you like it, you hate it, but the bottom line is this is a festival that got us worldwide notoriety.
Put us on the map.
Absolutely. How do you not even whisper something out of the chamber, out of the halls of City Hall, to suggest, hey, we need to get a think tank together to see how we can save this thing? You know, and that goes back to the whole, and they had that whole enchilada fiesta softball tournament. I told you last week, I said it was, I mentioned it was the second largest. It got rained out completely.
I saw the lights on all night.
Yeah. I mean, they were on all night, but, you know, they ended up going to a coin toss to declare a champion. My understanding is most teams got three games, four games in, where normally you're getting 10, 12.
That's a shame. But I mean, the rain was really coming down.
It was coming down. It was pretty.
And it was also hail.
Yes. Big time golf ball size hail. That was pretty shocking.
Yeah. Hopefully they were in the dugout when that hit. But talking about leadership here in the city, who in the city has stood up? Has the mayor stood up to say that they're going to save the enchilada?
Absolutely not. No, the mayor is so busy patting himself on the back for a job poorly done. It shocks me. I mean, I'm just seriously. I shook his hand at City Hall when I was submitting my signatures, and he is just about as arrogant as it gets.
Yeah,
I mean, I cannot believe the arrogance that emits from him for where we're at in this current climate in the city. It's just shocking to me that they're so steadily patting each other on the back. And this is the primary reason why, it's one of many primary reasons, to be honest with you. But you don't have to look beyond that whole enchilada fiesta disappearing to know that the city council is completely out of touch, with what things are important to this community, what things that need to be saved, what things are, important to invest in. They've missed it.
And we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Hey, Sergio. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
Hey, what's up?
Well, I was wondering, I'm listening to this. It makes a lot of sense, 100% sense of what's being talked about. I've been here since 2006, so I'm not really in the groove of, but the question I'm asking myself, and I haven't heard it yet, is why the people continually vote these career politicians
Sergio, hold on a second. There's a guy that's on the county commission, and it's Wayne Hancock, or has somebody else called him Wayne Halfcocked, and he came in from another state. He ran for office immediately, like he was sent here from another planet. He got into office, and recently he said that our population had doubled since 2007. And when there were howls of protest from the crowd, Billy Garrett pointed out that it was a statement, not a poll, which, so anyway, you've got, I feel like there's a disinterest in the city, in the political process. People are, it's like surveying members of a concentration camp. What difference does it make who the commandant is,
Right. Yeah. If you kind of focus on what you just said, it's kind of the reason that we're in the condition we're in.
Well,
people just,
and the gentleman that he just mentioned, I mean, this is a perfect example of what I've stepped in over the last couple of weeks. This is not a Steve, go in there through the front door like you always do, take one for the team, passion, heart. This is not that scenario.
But we're talking about the politics or the science of politics and whether you can get the vote, but who's bringing the message forward?
That's my point. This progressive voter alliance has figured out a way to attack our community by utilizing voter apathy to put people in office. It's that simple.
And realistically, I've never met Wayne Hancock. I know I've met Billy Garrett. He's been on the show. He's a smart guy. I disagree with his politics, but Wayne Hancock, you shouldn't be running and making decisions if you're so out of touch that you don't know that the population hasn't doubled in the last 8 years. It's only increased by 7%.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's the reason I called it, because I've only been here, 9 years. That doesn't qualify me for anything. That's why I called and I questioned it. I'm going to tell you something, and I don't want to be venturing in anything real deep, but most of the people I work with and know, my neighbors and friends, my family here, all Democrats. No matter who it is, they're going to vote Democrat, period.
And you're calling out for a little bit of change. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, and we'll take we're going to come back and talk to Steve. Let's talk about what can be done here, because I know that you've just got a political education that was probably a little bit shocking and painful. 6:43, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180, and we're talking to Steve Calderazzo. He's stepped out of the race, but Steve, are you going to run again in the future, do you think?
I'm not counting that out.
Okay, and folks, we're going to come back and hear what he thinks we should do as the city. All right, folks, we got Steve here, 6:46. I want to get into something that was brought up during his call. I wanted Steve to come on the show because I wanted to hear his explanation. Steve, there was an email that was sent around that I know that was meant as a hit piece on you. It sure contained, according to what you told me, some true things, but things that, if they were true, were mischaracterized, and then a lot of false stuff. And when you saw it, you realized that someone was trying to get you out of the race immediately. Why?
Sure. Well, you know, I think I understand why. I know why. It's all, you know, the reality is, you know, we have one mission. We have absolute, we must, as citizens in this community, we have to have one mission, and that is to prevent this progressive voter.
Okay. All right. So someone somewhere along the line saw you as a threat to getting a moderate in.
Yes, correct. Okay. I was more threatening. It wasn't that what I was going to bring was going to be terrific, and they're all behind that message, certainly. You know, I mean, everyone knows we need to change some things,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
You know, but the reality is, at the end of the day, there's only one goal, and that's to prevent the, you know, basically, to me, they're ruining the city, and I'll be flat honest with you.
As a businessman, you're saying this.
Absolutely. They're destroying it. It's to continue to perpetuate the destruction of the city, and I don't understand how people...
Well, here's the thing. Someone comes along and they have the confidence of a leader, and I'll use Barack Obama as an example. He's into office, who admittedly didn't have any experience in their entire life. It spent either in college or as a community organizer. Which is a radical activist. There's no other kind of community organizer, or a college professor. His entire background was seeped in Marxism and socialism. His influences were either socialists or Marxists. It's his family. And he gets into office. He's got this beautiful vision. People want the safe path to prosperity and safety. They follow that path down to their destruction. And so in this community, where we've had a mini passion play of the same thing, with these people saying, we've got to vote against plastic bags. We've got to let Washington know we're behind them on global warming. We need to give our land away so it's safeguarded. All of the things that, if you got more and more into the minimum wage and you got into this 20-year plan, it's all it's a mosaic. Each tile may not be distinct, but when you lay the mosaic out on the wall, you see it is the description of socialism or far leftism, and the end of the road for that is total destruction of your economy.
Absolutely. There's plenty of socialist governments, organizations, whatever, governing bodies in history to show that it does
it's
not
never
work.
Never
worked.
Ever. Here's the most poignant part of it. The places that have tried more and more to apply these ideas have failed greater and greater. The greatest drop in recorded human history outside of war of GDP, of gross domestic product, of the national product of labor, of the all the businesses, happened when Joseph Stalin applied Marxism to Russia, because people stopped working, because people being animals, being human beings in their mindset, do not want to work when they will not be rewarded. And it would be suicide to do otherwise.
Sure. No, that's just the reality. I think the progressive people just need to understand this. And I hate the fact that they stole that word, because we're all trying to make progress. So I
well,
want that word
liberalism.
Back.
They stole liberalism. Liberalism originally was the movement of freedom, of liberty, economic growth and capitalism. That was the original meaning, the Bill of Rights, constitutionalism. That was all liberalism. They hijacked the word on 1900.
And government control. So, I mean, that's the reality. And what we need to do here with this whole minimum wage thing, really, this is what needs to happen. We must allow, this is a national push. We cannot be the leader in everything bad, including destroying business, by pushing a higher minimum wage. It makes zero sense. We lead the nation.
But let's talk about the alternative. How can we grow for all the people that are afraid, and they've already seen how bad the city here, and they're hoping if they get a minimum wage job, they can pay their mortgage somehow or their rent?
Well, I think
higher minimum wage.
Well, certainly, I think, you know, I said it 1,000 times. There is something to be said for minimum wage. It tells you what you don't want to. It tells you exactly what you don't want to make in the future.
Yeah.
And so it is an absolute motivating factor in your life. It should be a driving force for you to go get your education, for you to go whatever that is. But it certainly is important in our society.
When they talk about a living wage and minimum wage, most minimum wage earners are not trying to pay rent. They're kids.
Sure. Yes. Those kids are learning responsibility,
yeah,
discipline,
uh-huh,
all of those important things, future in their future position.
We've got a grim struggle in this valley. What can we do for our economic future?
Well, what we can start with instantaneously is lift some of the strings, the rules and the sanctions that we've placed on ourselves by the people that we've put in office.
Well, you mentioned one thing I thought was interesting, that all of these parks are out of code. And they're just treacherous places with the steps are dangerous and all this stuff. And you say, well, you know, it's what's fascinating is about the impact fees.
Yeah, impact fees have a string attached to it. This is our government making decisions for us. They attach a string to those fees that says these fees are not able to be used for existing parks.
Even for a $400,000.
Yeah, even for a $400,000.
So it's got to be for future parks. Kelly O'Connell, 652, got Steve Calderazzo here. And sad to see him out of the race, but if he's taking one for the party, I salute that. And it's the party of growth. The GOP in this town has never contacted me one time. I'm astounded. But I guess that means I'm an independent thinker. 653 on the button name, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450, 805, 6180. And we'll be back to finish up this conversation with Steve.
When I'm feeling no pain, sometimes I think it's a shame. When I get feeling better, when I'm feeling no pain.
Hey, it's Kelly. It's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly.
Who's
Hi,
it?
Kelly. This is Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. What's
Jerry?
Up?
Hey, there is an answer to your question. What is the alternative to a minimum wage?
Sure.
It's called contractual wages.
Okay. Let's mention that real quick on the air. We're on in 3 seconds.
Okay.
And I've got Jerry here. He's called in on the line. He said there's an answer to the minimum wage. It's called wages. And Jerry, fill us in briefly.
Okay. Basically, it comes straight out of the Bible when in Israel afterwards, but he
Jacob.
Went and he married, tried to marry a lady, but he worked 7 years for that lady. Okay.
It was for a man, and he was working for the lady. He was trying to get his wife, and he got tricked into getting the ugly sister.
Well, yes. But he didn't specify in the contract who he wanted. All right, now you got to be careful when you do contracts.
You need a lawyer. You need a freaking lawyer. Judge Ryan is in here, and he's putting two thumbs up. You need a lawyer before a contract negotiation. Everybody knows that.
Okay, well, anyway, the sports people do it that way.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay,
thanks for the call. We're running out of time. Steve, let's just dig down. We just got 2 minutes here.
Yeah.
Give us a shot.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the ultimate goal here is for all of us in the city to be prosperous. I mean,
what are these people that are running everything, what do they want?
Well, they want the same thing. People, I'm thinking about my team.
I'm going to tell you right now, for somehow we got an idea in this little hamlet here in this valley that we're going to avoid. Speaking of taking one for the team, we're not going to grow our economy. We're going to fight against global warming. This is crazy talk, folks. There's huge disagreement over the science, but we don't need to commit Harry Carey to. We need to grow for our kids.
Yes, we need to open the doors to business. We need to take care of what we already have. We need to take stop tying our money up and let's start putting our money to use where it's desperately needed. Let's stop building the wrong phases.
$400,000 toilets don't flush any better, folks.
Well, the original budget was $450,000. I should tell you how out of touch. I mean, it's just crazy. $450,000 for restrooms at Young Park is complete insanity.
It didn't even include a bidet. So, no. Steve, well, let's get you back here.
Sure.
On a regular basis, can we speak some truth to power here?
I think so. To work, to be honest, Kelly, I've lost so much in the last 4 weeks. Doing this.
You got a nice ride out there, though.
Well, it's been It's been an education for sure. I'm prepared next time. Certainly, I have my head wrapped around what needs to take place and what has to happen, and how I need to align myself so that I can make a real legitimate go.
I know you're not running, but put your number out if people want to talk to you about how to move the city forward.
575-202-3476. I wish some city personnel would have called in any of the two shows I've been in to object to any of the things I'm saying, or at least put up some level of an argument.
I can guarantee you're going to get a visit from Codes in the near future. A little payback there.
All right, I'll go anyway, through the weeds right now.
Folks, we're taking a break on the air. I got Judge Ryan here, and we'll be right back.
I can picture every move that a man could make. Getting loved, loving is your first mistake. Someday you better take care. I find you can beat them down my back.
And I'm here with... folks, I'm here with Judge Ryan, and good morning, Judge.
Good morning, Kelly. How are you today?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Good. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, today is Judge Wednesday. All right. So there was a debate last night.
Yes, there was. There was a forum put on by the NAACP, and all of the city candidates were there, there was the mayors and the judicial candidates as well, myself and my opponent.
Okay, and how did that go?
Well, I thought the NAACP did an extremely good job, very efficient job of putting that on. Everything moved in a very timely manner. They had the questions prepared ahead of time. They didn't let us know what the questions were, but they were all prepared to go with their questions from the people that attended. And they filled the time in very, very nicely and moved along in a very swift and efficient manner. And I thought it came off really well.
Well, we had Bobby Green, Dr. Bobby Green on a few days ago to talk about this. And I think it was on Friday. And wait a minute. It was on Monday because I invited her on Friday. I just met her, but I was very impressed by her.
Yeah, she did a really good job. She was the moderator. She moved the thing along quite well. Curtis Rosemond was there as well, and he was helping out and he was coordinating. And there was a pretty good turnout. I'd say about 100 people were there, maybe.
And so, what kind of stuff was talked about?
Well, there were each set of candidates were asked questions of the people that were there, they were with respect to the city council, there were questions regarding the city priorities, where the city's going, what's with the taxes, and
stuff that you can't really you wouldn't be able to comment in even if you wanted to because of your role as a judge.
Correct. So some of the questions that were asked of myself and my opponent were, what we could do to alleviate the violence in America. There was some broad questions about America in general, violence and the overcrowded prisons and so forth. With respect to that, all I can do is give in. With regard to overriding prisons, but more specifically, I tailored my questions towards what was going on in the city of Las Cruces by and large, and so a lot of the questions the lines down at City Court, you know, how can we alleviate those lines? And so I indicated at that time that, well, you know, we're opening the doors at 7:30 in the morning so people can get in there early and get there before work, take care of any tickets they have, and we're staying open until 5:30 at night. Also, we're currently in talks with the City Council for new City Court building.
Where would that be?
Well, they have a building identified, but it is undisclosed. Is
it the one with the silver girders hanging out at Main Street that hasn't been touched for 2 years?
Silver girders?
Yeah, the kind of half-finished building with a fence around it that we drive past every day?
Oh, no, no.
That might be a good use for that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, I know which building you're talking about. No, they haven't really identified what building, but for obvious reasons, they don't want the price to go up. And so, they are in talks to alleviate that situation. So I think that in the next 4 years, we're going to see an expansion of the city. Next 4 years, we're going to see a more force that can work efficiently, and there's going to be more community awareness with respect to the criminal justice system on a local level.
That sounds good. I have a suggestion, though. We ought to, I know we're a small city, but I think we ought to do an implosion of that building. You know how they do? They like take down these giant structures in other cities.
Oh, uh-huh.
Maybe on a smaller level.
Well, they have ideas for it. They want perhaps to turn into a historical, like a City of Las Cruces Historical Museum.
Who owns that thing?
Well, the city owns it. The federal government built it in 1917.
I'm talking about the one that with the chain around it that was half built.
That's, oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about.
It's confusing. I know we got a couple of monstrosities out there.
Well, that's a question. Now, I can only tell you what I know from reading the newspaper. That is apparently a developer bought that and then ran out of money. And so. You know, I have had discussions with the city council about, well, you know, it's, you know, or people, you know, isn't it an eyesore? I mean, you know, and I do know that there are legal steps you can take if there's something to lean on it and then make the people do something about it. If they don't, you know, the city can move on it. But I'm not sure where that is right there. I mean, I'm not sure what's going on with that. And so, I'm not really privy to those conversations. And
I'm going to start a movement.
Well, I want to, you know, I probably want to stay out of it too, because, you know, I might have to rule on something somewhere down the line. So I kind of try to stay neutral, you know.
Judges have to be neutral. We're talking with Kieran Ryan. It is 7:12 right now. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180. And I'm going to ask the judge what he considers the most important characteristics of a judge, and I'm going to ask him also some of the questions that were asked last night during the conversation between he and his opponent, and we'll be right back to do that.
Picking up the pieces of my sweet shattered dream, I wonder how the old folks are tonight. Her name was Anne, and I'll be damned if I recall her name. She left me now knowing what to do.
Folks, we're here with Kieran Ryan, and Kieran's a friend of mine. I've known him before he became a full-time on the bench, and have a very high regard for him. He was a person that I always looked up if I had a question about the law or needed some advice. So I consider him one of the wise men in Las Cruces. But Kieran, I was going to ask you what are the characteristics of a good judge in your opinion?
Well, I think one of the most profound characteristics of a good judge is experience. You know, you get judicial instinct through experience, and that judicial instinct comes from a lot of areas. One of them, you know, you have to kind of graduate from the university of life, you know, first.
And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you. You've done different things. You're in the military at a young age, and you've actually stated to me a couple of times remarkable stories of experiences that you had, and made me wish that I had gone in there. You've traveled, you've done different things. You were in the printing business for a while. Does that help with being a judge?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely does. You know, a judge is in the people business, and you have to be a honed in to the people, you know, and the way people think,
the psychology. And how about when people lie? You got to have a truthometer in you. You got to have a meter in you.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting. People do come into court and lie. If I can give you one little anecdote that I had, which I thought was rather humorous. I had a guy come in the morning. He was a prisoner, and he was arrested for possession of drug paraphernalia. And I asked him, you know, he pled guilty to it. And he says, well, I got up in the morning. I went to a party all night, and I got up in the morning, and I put somebody else's pants on. And in those pants was a crack pipe or meth pipe.
Funny how that happens.
And I said, okay, let me get this straight. So you put on someone else's clothes in the morning, someone else's pants in the morning from a party that you had been at all night. Yeah. And so I just kind of looked at him. And one of the barometers that I have in the courtroom is the other prisoners sitting there started laughing really loud. So, you know, it was kind of an interesting thing.
The story didn't even fly with
the story didn't fly with them, and they thought it was rather humorous. And but anyway, you know, people do say things, they do lie, and not all people. That's a very small percentage of people. But if you understand, if you're able to talk to people from all walks of life, you know, that's a very good quality you need to have.
Well, I know that you read a lot. We've talked about books in the past and books that have influenced you, and also whatever book you happen to be reading at the time. Sometimes it's fiction, sometimes it's nonfiction. I know you love history.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I was just reminded of how history repeats itself by the recent news of Russia going into Syria and invading into a Turkish airspace.
Yeah.
As you know, in the Crimean War, the Turks and the Russians fought it out, as well as the British. And that was due to Russian incursion in Turkish space as well. The Turks and the Russians have been fighting for centuries. Every 10 years they had it out. And so the Ottoman Empire.
Battle of Great Kingdoms, I guess, at one time.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and now here we are today, aren't we? With Russia going in and invading in their space. So it's hard to say, but obviously there's been a vacuum that has been created in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And Vladimir Putin believes that he is the vacuum filler.
Yeah, power abhors a vacuum.
And he has these, as we say, revanchist, you know, feelings, revanchist.
Yeah, he wants to bring the great Russia back.
Absolutely. You know, he even said it was the most geopolitical disaster of the 20th century, the breaking up of the Soviet Union. But anyway, so, yeah, I am a history reader. I like history, and I read all the time. I'm an avid reader. I get about three books going at once. But, you know, that's just well, I've always had that. But and that comes from being a lawyer then, doesn't it? You know,
and your mom is a great reader of history books.
Yeah.
She knows a lot. And as a matter of fact, not to bring this up just out of nowhere, but speaking of the Middle East, she lived in Saudi Arabia. I happen to know that.
She was hired in the 80s. My mother was a nurse administrator. She was a registered nurse, but she was also she was hired by hospitals. She was like the head nurse, and she would hire nurses. And so she was hired by the Saudis back in the 80s, mid 80s, to go to Al Khobar and open a hospital in Al Khobar, one of the first hospitals in Al Khobar in Saudi Arabia. And she was the head nurse, and her job was to hire nurses. And at that time, most of the nurses were Filipinas, and they were and like that. So she lived over there for a year. I think they couldn't really stand her anymore because she, you know, wasn't going to go along with their, you know, because she had to dress like a man. They wouldn't let her go to the post office by herself. She had to go with an escort everywhere. She couldn't go to the bank. These are just some of the female restrictions because you come, so it was interesting, the stories that she had.
And she was kind of an emancipated woman.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Strong-minded. Absolutely. And, next month she'll be 93, and, God bless her.
She's still reading the history books.
Still reading every day. Well, yeah, it keeps you young, reading.
It really certainly does. And they've done studies that if you keep your mind active, it really does affect your brain and your body.
Yeah, I think so.
I think, Judge, we could be on the verge of some growth in this city if we get a little economic activity, if we tap into Santa Teresa. And how is that going to affect the court?
Yeah, well, I think, we need a new courthouse for municipal court. And I think that the new courthouse should be located in the geophysical center of Las Cruces and what is perceived to be the geophysical center of Las Cruces 20 years, 30 years down the road. Now, I think only city planners can predict that, but I think that would make it more convenient for everybody. And so not everybody has to go downtown to, take care of a ticket if you live out at Sonoma Ranch, or if you live south of the city. But yeah.
Is there any chance that the Muni Court will take back the DUIs that were at one time handed over to the DA?
I think that what we're seeing right now is we're seeing the city attorney declining to prosecute DWIs in municipal court. Yeah, and we're seeing once it goes to trial, the police officer has to refile the case in magistrate court. And we're having discussions right now. Of course, if I'm elected as presiding judge,
you'll be the chief administrator down there.
Correct. My view would be that anytime a lawyer enters their appearance in the case, the city attorney should enter their appearance in the case.
Right.
When a defense lawyer enters their appearance in the case, so now, instead of a lawyer going up against a police officer, at trial, where the police officer, it doesn't have the legal training that a lawyer has, and so kind of one-sided. But if there's somebody enters their appearance in the case, then I think that the city should enter their appearance in the case. I mean, it just goes without saying.
Yeah, that makes sense. 7:26, let's take a little break here. I'm going to come back, and we got Mike McKay here. No. Well, it's Kelly, and you've just heard an emergency alert, so I'll try to find out a little bit more information for you. I've got Judge Ryan here, and we were in the middle of yakking about the future of the city and maybe some of the changes. And in any event, let me try to get the Weather Channel up here real quick. But last night I got a text from the Weather Channel that accidentally opened up Kindle there. Alert severe thunderstorm warning. And so I'm sure that you probably saw the lightning and the cumulonimbus clouds that were over El Paso yesterday, and then there were some that were towards Deming and Hatch. So we've got more of the same. Let me take a little break here, and then I'm going to come back and tell you what I can find out, if there's anything else about the weather. We're at 7:28. Got Judge Ryan is a very urbane and a guy that reminds me of the classical liberal trios of study in the university. He's a very well-read guy, not a liberal guy necessarily. He's a judge. He doesn't have a real position on the spectrum. But anyway, we're going to come back and talk to him, and I'll find out what I can about the weather.
Every highway, let me slip away on you. Every highway, you see that it is.
It's 7:32. I'm in the studio with Judge Karen Ryan. We've got the forecast, and it's mostly El Paso County, so showers and thunderstorms likely after 1 p.m. So, I mean, don't be as worried. Obviously, if you're heading down there, they seem like they're in need of some infrastructure down there for water, Judge.
Well, every time it rains, you see great puddles and a lot of rain gathering in intersections and so forth. You know, hard to say. You know, maybe they think, well, it just rains like this once a year. We don't have to spend a whole great deal of money on it. People just put up with the inconvenience. But God forbid we should have one of these thousand-year events. And,
well, like they had they had one in Carolina that I meant to get into. I mean, it's terrible out there, but also, they had a thousand-year flood, I think, up in Utah, 30 miles from my mom's house. And I saw a video how it happened. It happened up on the high plateau above Colorado City, and
right.
The water rushed down, and there was no rain in the area, so they didn't really know what was going on. These polygamists, or they call them poligs, a polygamous family got into a couple of vans and drove down, and I found a video that seemed to show where their van went in the water, because there was another group of people behind, well behind them, taping them, but the ground just disappeared underneath them. The water rose so fast, it was astounding.
Yeah, real sad situation.
Now, let me ask you this, Judge. You've been in the Navy. You heard about the story of this El Faro, about an 800-foot-long cargo ship that decided to sail into the gates of hell. It decided to try to get away from the hurricane by sailing directly into it. I've never heard, you know.
That's suicide.
It was a suicide mission.
You know, I know living here in the desert, you know, we're not, you know, we don't see the vastness or the incredible power of the sea. But once you're out on the sea, as I was in the Navy, you know, you are just a dot on this.
You know, and I think I had told you about my experience as a professional fisherman up off of Kodiak Island. But when you get out on the ocean, I don't care how big of a ship you're on, it's humbling.
Well, I was on an aircraft carrier for a while in the Navy, and I've witnessed waves coming over the top of the deck of the aircraft carrier, you know, and it's just...
That just seems impossible.
And everything's battened down, you know. You got to batten everything down, and everything's locked down tight, and you just got to, like a cork, you just got to ride it out.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, yeah, these things should not happen in a modern day with GPS and with these things, because these people, like an airplane, they go around these storms, you know?
Yeah.
And they're supposed to go around these storms. Apparently there was some kind of a mistake or some kind of a breakdown on the GPS, and they went into it.
33 people died. But I mean, I was thinking about this 800-foot ship. You know, some of these military vessels, if they're in bad seas, you're going to have a little bit of damage. But a cargo ship is not designed for inclement weather.
Yeah, well, anytime you take a direct hit from a hurricane or a typhoon, you're just really, really.
Well, they said when they went out, the Coast Guard went out, and they said it was the most challenging weather that any of the people who were in their search crew had ever been in. At the time, it was winds of 115 miles an hour. And 50-foot seas, and they couldn't even pick up the body bag. Well, it was a survival suit that had gone over and that had a body in it. But the ship was sailing into the hurricane, and the last email I got was that it's very, very strong winds and rough seas from the young lady. And what happened is they lost propulsion, which meant that the ship turned sideways. It was already listing 15% because of water taken on, and then it would have just been rolled by the wave and sunk.
Yeah, it's a real tragedy.
What are those? Did you guys have survival suits on your when?
Oh yeah.
What are they? What are they like?
Well, we had drills, you know, and drills so forth, you know, and we would, you know, in case of a situation like that, you know, everybody goes to. Your own station where you're supposed to be, and so we're well trained for that. We go down to the boats, and we have boats and stuff like that we can get in and take off on, you know, in case the ship starts going down. But, yeah, we're well – people in the Navy are well trained for these events, you know.
And I would think that the people in the Merchant Marines wouldn't have the same training.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if they have the same kind of what we call GQ training, general quarters. You go to where you're supposed to be, where your workstation is. But also in the Navy, you know, we have those hatches, and we just batten those hatches down, and they're airtight, watertight, and it really makes the ship like a cork.
Yeah.
The air is in, and it doesn't get out, you know, unless it's hit by a bomb or something to open it up. But, you know, it will float in the worst possible situation.
Oh, folks, we're talking to Kieran Ryan, and we just got a weather report of inclement weather down in El Paso County that could affect us a little bit. If you're driving down into El Paso, just be a little bit careful. Thunderstorms down there, 738, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450, 805, 6180. We'll be back to pick the mind, the versatile mind of Judge Ryan in just a moment.
My head down to my shoes. Every highway, let me slip away on you.
It's 7:41. Today is the 7th of October. If you've just tuned in, we had an emergency message break through the program that told us about some flash flooding potential and thunderstorms down in El Paso County. Could be up here, though. It's been a couple of wet days. I didn't see that we were supposed to get an inch of rain the other day over the weekend, but in all of the hail, I've got Judge Ryan here. Judge, was there any hail damage in your neighborhood?
I think it kind of hailed sporadically. I don't think it was evened out. I think it was just maybe one block got it, the other block didn't.
Yeah, that was my experience. Right. I was down at my office, my law office, and there was hail bouncing off just a couple of times off the skylight. And then I know somebody right down the street, literally, like you say, a block away, got heavy hail damage on their car. I saw it.
Yeah, I didn't get any hail damage on my car, so I looked very
like
carefully.
The hand of the Lord. One house it touched, the other one it missed.
There it is. Yeah.
So, all right. So I want to go over, Judge, since we're lucky enough to have you here. What are some of the questions that came up during the debate, and what were your answers?
Well, there were some very good questions, very interesting questions. One of them was, how can we make justice more equal for everybody? So
this is an NAACP function, and of course they're going to be asking, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the news about Black Lives Matter and everything. So it's on people's minds, minorities in the justice system.
Well, you know, one way is, you know, I think education is very pivotal when it comes to the criminal justice system. I think people need to know just exactly what to expect if they get themselves caught into that. And I think more education, more community, more awareness on the people's part before that. But outside of that, I think there is an imbalance with respect to representation of the indigent defendant. Someone doesn't have any money to hire a lawyer, as opposed to somebody that has the money to hire a lawyer. And you know, Kelly, as well, you know,
the vast difference
of that. And that is something that we really, really need to work on, you know, because somebody that has the resources to put together a defense team for a perceived crime, you know, can have a far better or different, you know, outcome, you know, with respect to putting on evidence, you know, hiring investigators,
developing a legally sufficient theory defense.
Whereas somebody that's sitting in jail as a public defender, not to say the public defenders aren't good, because a lot of them are very, very good.
They're spread thin.
They're spread thin. They don't have, I think, and so in my court, now the attorneys get paid a certain amount of money for indigent defense.
I think it's $100.
I want to raise it because I believe the more money you pay people, you know, the more
serious the lead the attorney's going to take. If a lawyer gets paid $100 for a case, a lawyer's time is worth $150 an hour or $250, $300 in the courtroom. The lawyer technically would have to put in a half an hour, 45 right. minutes to earn that. And I know all of the attorneys that I know in town would put more time into it, but there is an economic issue here that if all your clients were indigent, you'd have a hard time paying your bills.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Not only that, if you go to trial, then all the time you put into it for a trial. So I'd like to see what I can do about looking into raising that for the indigent defense. Also, every case that comes into my court to me is unique and different because every individual is unique and different. Nobody's the same. There's only one you, and there's never going to be another you. You know,
when you're interacting with the defendants, then you're trying to get to know them a little bit.
Yeah, I want to know a little bit about them. I might ask them, "Are you from here? You got family here?" It tells me a lot of things. You work. Where are you from? Well, I'm from Baltimore. Okay. Well, how? Why are you? You know, mm-hmm. How did you get here? You know, what brought you to our community? You know, my girlfriend or my mom or my folks moved here. My dad was in the military. That information tells you a lot about the individual mm-hmm. and what's going on. It also helps me set a bond.
Yeah.
You know, if there's ties to the community, if they work, you know, then it makes it easier to set a bond.
How long you been doing this gig again?
17 and a half years.
And you think all of those 17 years inform you?
Absolutely inform me. Not only that, it makes me a better judge. Makes me a better judge. The more things I see, the more people I see. I've met thousands of people as my time as a judge.
Tens of thousands, I'm going to ask.
Tens of thousands, and I have... learned quite a bit from that. And so, you know, you need an experienced judge for the presiding judge of this court. And along with administering the budget and assessing the personnel situation.
And you've run a law office with some moving parts in it.
Absolutely. 20 years. And, I've also, Judge Miller Burns and myself have worked hand in hand together on the budget issues, and we've worked policies and procedures. And so it would be a seamless transition if I were to be presiding judge, essentially.
Now, do you know how much experience your opponent has in this arena?
I absolutely am not sure. My own experience, Bill, I know Bill. I like Bill. He's a good person.
You're a likable guy.
Likable person. Other than that, I don't. I've never had coffee with him. I've never sat down.
But, I mean, is he... Has he been a judge?
To my understanding, he may have been a part-time domestic violence hearing officer alternate. But
that's not being a judge.
No, well, no. But I don't think he's ever been certainly not in municipal court.
Or probably any other court, I'm guessing. But I'm going to try to get – I don't have his number, but I'm going to try to track it down and have him on the show. Maybe we could have both of you guys come on together.
Oh, sure. I'll be delighted.
We've got Kieran Ryan here, and just talking about what it takes to be a good judge. His experience is 17 years on the bench, and he's running against a gentleman. I've got to find a little bit more about 748, Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and we're going to come back and finish up with Judge Ryan. Well, here with Judge Ryan, and there is a warning about flash flooding in the area, but mostly down in El Paso County. Just be careful. And if you know of any streets that are prone to flooding, you might want to find a different way if it starts raining. But in any event, Judge, what were some of the other questions that you thought were good ones in your answer in this debate last night?
Well, they asked about the lines, of course, down at municipal court, as I indicated, and they asked about pretty much another one that was an interesting question was about these fees and fines, you know, and how can we collect all these fees and fines? Well, municipal court is owed literally millions of dollars in past fees and fines. And so, you know, you need to come up with innovative ideas to try to collect that, to try to alleviate that, because if you don't pay your fines or fees by date certain, you get a warrant, you know, and the warrant picks you up, puts you in jail, and then you come and see me in the morning. And, you know, and I look at, you see you owe $500 and it's been owed for 3 years and you had to pay. And so I say, you know, well, how come you haven't paid it? Well, you know, depending on, well, I haven't had a job or whatever, you know, I'll try to alleviate that by putting them on a payment plan, you know, so they can pay it per month. And, you know, there's some ways on that, but really, that is a big issue, you know, because there's a lot of money outstanding.
There's a lot of people with warrants out there that don't even know it, Your Honor.
That's right. There are people that have warrants out there for failure to pay a fine, you know, 5 years ago. And, yeah, they don't even know it.
They don't even know it, and it's like a ticking time bomb in their pocket.
As soon as they get pulled over for something, get a parking ticket, whatever, boom. Oh, you have a warrant. What for? Well, failure to pay. Well, I thought I took care of that 3-5 years ago. No, you didn't. Okay, well, and click, click, they take them off to the jail. And then if they're unlucky enough to get arrested on a Friday, you know, they won't see me till Monday.
They'll marinate in the jail over the weekend.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's just a situation that we have to try to get under control. Also, a lot of them want to pay. They want to pay whatever it owes, but they're afraid to come down to the municipal court because they have a warrant. They're afraid they're going to get arrested.
Well, how about this? People that are illegal and maybe they don't have status. Maybe they're not illegal, but they're not citizens, and they're afraid to take care of their legal situation because they don't know what they don't understand maybe the law in the United States. They just understand it back in, say, Mexico.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we have situations where people from Mexico don't speak English. They are accustomed to the Mexican justice system,
which can be a little harsh.
They think that we have the same justice system here, which we do not.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when they get picked up down there, they might sit in, you know, Cerezo prison for, you know, 3-4 months before they get into court. You know?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. I know your wife is Hispanic. Does that help you to understand? I mean, this is a largely Hispanic area. Do you think it helps you to understand that culture and to be a better judge?
Oh, yes.
How so?
Oh, absolutely. We here have, you know, we are all marinated in the Hispanic culture here.
Yeah.
And that's because we live here by choice.
Yeah.
I love the Hispanic culture, you know, and the history and the people. And, my wife is Hispanic. My kids are Hispanic. We speak Spanish and English in our home. You know, I believe children should be raised with another language, primarily English here. But, you know, if you know Spanish or, you know, another language, you know, that can't hurt you in life, you know. And so I speak Spanish, I'm not fluent, but I'm proficient in Spanish, I guess you could say. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you live in this area. You know, you need to embrace that culture because it is part of the community. It is the community.
But it helps you to understand the motivations.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. It helps me to understand how somebody could be insulted. You know. How, a father and a son could get into an argument over something, you know, that seems trivial, but, you know, in reality, it's kind of a big thing. Yes, it does. It absolutely helps. All the information you have, it does help, you know, and it also helps with remedies, you know, if you want to remedy a situation.
And a remedy in the law is an answer to a problem. So, for instance, you know, well, anyway, go ahead, Judge.
No, yeah, you know, remedy the situation, it helps, you know, and certain remedies work quite well, you know, and, you know, given the cultural influences that we have here, you know. And this is America, you know. We are a cauldron of cultures, you know. And it makes us a better people. It makes us a better society.
Stronger, yeah.
Very, very much so.
Now we've had some experience with newbies coming in to run stuff in the United States. I'm going to guess you, but I ask you a question, but I think I know the answer. You already said it. Experience does matter when in leadership positions.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
Mm-hmm. No and question. Especially being a judge, your decision-making affects people's lives.
It absolutely does. And I take each case very, very seriously. I take each, you know, defendant very, very seriously. And yes.
We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Bill.
Bill, what's up?
Hey, you know, I was just wondering. I got a ticket the other day, and for a contest of speed.
Yeah.
And so I went to a judge, not this judge, but I went to a judge, and they sent me to a public defender. And the other guy that got a ticket with me, he got a ticket, and he just went to the judge to settle it, $40 fine. My public defender called me and said, "Don't worry about it. Don't do it again."
Fantastic. Well, that's a good experience, even with a public defender. Thanks for the call, Bill. These public defenders are necessary. I agree with this idea that you're going to raise the pay and get some more lawyers work in these cases. And everybody needs a lawyer. That's the Constitution. We're pretty much out of time, Judge. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Kelly. It's always a good experience here.
Yeah, and we're going to have Judge Wednesday next week. I hope you can make it.
Absolutely.
Folks, Kelly O'Connell Show, thanks for listening in AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. We'll see you back in 22 hours, and we got Glenn Beck coming and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all the superstars of talk radio. Yeah, we'll see you in 22 hours. Ciao.
Turning back the pages to the time I love them. I wonder if she'll ever do the same. Now the thing that I call living is just being satisfied with knowing I got no one left to blame. Every highway I got to see you, my old face. Every highway I've seen better days. The morning after blue.